made possible by a grant from the Happy Valley Adventure Bureau.
Your Sports Radio.
Broadcasting live, loud and proud from Central PA Sports Authority.
Woo-hoo!
WFXS America.
98.7 The Fox.
It is time for a fabulous, a fantastic, a feeling fine football Friday edition of Let's Talk right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Jeff Byers with you. You can call me Ironhead, and you can call me at 814-954-7266. On this Halloween Friday edition, as we kick off the three-day party weekend, treat style. Yeah, we're doing the treats. Forget the tricks. Plenty of tricks out there. We're just providing the treats on this Friday morning. Again, we'd love to hear from you. Open phone time most of this hour. We'll take a check of the sports scene, and yep, another busy weekend coming up. Good start to the weekend. It was a fun hockey night for yours truly. We'll have more on that and the rest of the sports scene, again, coming up in our second segment right around 8:20 this morning. Again, in the second hour, we will be joined by John Ziegler, and we will talk about his latest interview, which is with the wife of the, soon-to-be ex-wife of the so-called victim 10 in the Jerry Sandusky case, Ryan Rittmeyer. Her story is pretty interesting. The interview is a lengthy one, and I know I know there are some folks that don't have the time to devote a couple of hours to an interview, but we'll summarize it in the John Ziegler interview coming up at 9 o'clock. But she basically has gone from somebody, there's a lot of, I think, very interesting components to the interview that John conducted with her. And this was on the heels of an interview he did with Ryan Rittmeyer himself. Now, that still has not been released publicly, and I'll let John go into some details as to why that is. I think at some point that will be released publicly. There is some infighting within the Sandusky is innocent camp. We'll delve into that a little bit with John Ziegler as well, but again, that'll be in the 9 o'clock hour this morning. May want to stay tuned for that. We had an individual on the, and I do love folks that, again, it's a free country. We are all entitled to our opinions, but I do love the, oh boy, here we go. We got somebody that thinks Sandusky is innocent. It's like, yep, and I can explain to you why, and there's a lot of really good reasons. Why do you think he's guilty? Oh, he was found guilty in a court. Okay. There's been lots of innocent. You certainly wouldn't argue that there have been innocent people convicted in the court system, right? Right? Oh, but this is already settled. For crying out loud, it's over a decade. Yeah, pursuit of truth. Some of us care about it. What can I tell you? And it is fascinating. The number of people, pretty much everybody who is convinced he is guilty doesn't know anything about the case. They remember the media reports and, well, yeah, he was guilty. That assistant coach saw him anally raping a boy. No, nope, not what happened. And then you have to go through and explain. And at some point they either will listen and it's like, holy cow, or they just, I don't want to hear it. I'm busy. And they move on. And it's like, okay. But the folks that know the case, and it's a wide spectrum, I do find it interesting. the people who have taken the time to study the case, they know that Jerry Sandusky is innocent. It's the folks that haven't taken the time, and I'm not expecting everybody to take the time. Can't we all have busy lives. We've got to worry about our own problems. I get it. But those that do have the time, have taken the time, they all come to the same conclusion. Does that not make you wonder just a little bit if you presume that you already know what happened in that case? I would think it would. Anyways, John Ziegler coming up in the 9 o'clock hour this morning. It is Halloween. Folks, if you are heading out tonight, as we are with the the Mad Turtle and his red cast, be maybe even a little extra cautious and take a little care with the costumes. It does look like we're going to have some wind, a chance at least of some rain in some spots throughout the area tonight. So just take a little extra time. Certainly if you're out and about driving tonight, please be careful out there. We are going to have kiddos in costumes, very excited, not ideal weather conditions, so just be on the lookout. Be extra attentive would be my plea to one and all on this trick-or-treating evening. Again, for the most part, it looks like we should be rain-free. I think it's not being ruled out, the chance of little rain here or there in the area this evening. But mostly it looks like just cool and windy. And really not all that brutal on the temperature front. We'll be in the 40s. I mean, it's not going to be not going to be warm, but it's not as bad as it could be. For sure, for trick-or-treating this evening. If you want to share with us, are you giving out... I do have a couple of friends. Now, we don't go the extra mile. I think we provide good, legit Halloween candy bars, but we go with the mini bars and we tell people two or three. Now, I think we may be heading over to another neighborhood with a friend this evening, and so I think we are going to be leaving out probably a couple of bowls with the number of folks we have in our neighborhood, and take two or three. I do know I have at least two friends that give out the full-sized candy bars. That is next-level stuff. Job well done. Now, again, we'll give out two or three of the minis, but, full candy bars is a pretty special thing to see in your trick-or-treat bag. Again, I will make my plea, do not hand out toothbrushes or anything tooth care. Leave that to the parents. They'll take care of the kids' teeth. Don't be that person. Be the person that brings a smile to the kid's face. They want the candy. Give them the candy. I think we have, I'm trying to think what all we bought. I think we have the Twix, the Snickers, and the Kit Kats. I feel like there might be a fourth one in there that I am forgetting. We're doing at least those three. Do we have the Crunch Bars maybe? There's something else in there, I think. We have three or four different mini candy bars, and again, we'll have them set out on a bowl on the porch. And if you are a kid trick-or-treating tonight, and you come across a bowl on a porch, just take the two or three, or if they have specified one, just take that. Don't you be that person where you're, nobody's around, and you take 10... 12 pieces, for crying out loud. You're going to get plenty over the course of the evening. Don't be greedy on this Halloween night. And if you are going out as an adult in costume, Love to hear what you're going as. If you are at home and providing adult treats, do tell. And if you want to give your address, you know, saying I'm willing to listen as we head into the three-day Halloween party weekend. And as is often the case, we get the stories on what is the favorite candies for Halloween. And once again, I think every year we've done this, which is going back a few decades now. I think Reese's Peanut Butter Cups have been, are, and will remain the overall number one favorite candy and candy bar for the kiddos to receive on Halloween. But we always get the stories. Well, this is what's popular here. This is what is popular there. I think I like the Twizzlers. That seems to get mixed reactions. Not quite as drastic as the candy corn, but I like the Twizzlers. I don't think you can go wrong there. Now, I was never a big Sour Patch Kids person, but they are very popular. Skittles, also not ever one of my favorites. Again, I'll eat both. Don't misunderstand. I'm okay with either. But yeah, I'd rather just have the candy bars or the licorice. And I'm one of those weirdos that likes the black licorice too. Sign me up for that. And I'll take yours if you don't like it. And I know there's a lot of folks that don't like the black licorice. I think this was Reader's Digest. Yep, Reader's Digest. Again, these polls are all a bunch of them out there. Reader's Digest does have Reese's Peanut Butter Cups as the favorite overall in the country and the favorite here in Pennsylvania. Number one candy. M&M's are the second most popular. This is in the United States. Hershey's milk chocolate bar, just the standard chocolate bar, checking in at number three. Snickers is number four. I think Snickers would be my number one, and Twix would be my number two. Skittles five. Nerds, I'm glad to see Nerds is still high on the list. Number six. Sour Patch Kids seven. Twix number eight. Twix is better than that. Twix is underranked, in my opinion, there. Good Twix bar is hard to beat. I would have Snickers 1, Twix 2. Kit Kat is 9 on this list, and Airheads is 10. I also like some of the other less popular candy bars, like your Butterfinger. Can never go wrong with a Butterfinger. I love the Baby Ruths. And we do have a situation, unfortunate for the kiddo, but perhaps fortunate for mom and dad this year at our house, where we have the expander for the Dear Mad Turtle. And so the sticky gummy stuff, not so much recommended. So now, the unfortunate part for me, it's really mom that's going to win out here, because I'm not really big into the gummies and the Swedish fish and that stuff. I'll take it, but if there's other options, I will take the other options. Give me just good solid chocolate any day of the week. So she tends to like that stuff, and so depending on what we find in the bags this year, that may end up working out very well for mom at our house. Talked to a few more people yesterday. Still have not found anybody that truly believes Penn State is going to win this game with Ohio State tomorrow. I do have several that are like, I think it's going to be a little closer than you're thinking, Ironhead. I have it as a 21-point I think the spread of 20.5 is right on the mark. I have 38-17 Buckeyes tomorrow, and I'm not happy about it. I want to be wrong. I want to see Penn State go out and shock the world. I just, I'm just not seeing it with the line play. But man, I hope Penn State does go out, rallies around Terry Smith, rallies around each other, and shocks the world. But if there's anybody in our area outside of that locker room that is feeling even mildly confident in that result, I have not run into them yet. Again, I've run into a couple that are like, nah, I think it'll be a good game. Yeah, you think we can win? No. Let's not get carried away. Okay. And again, it's college sports. Crazy things happen. I think Ohio State is really dialed in for this game. I think they have some extra motivation, and I don't think that is good news for Penn State. Revamped though that offense may be, and I am curious to see what this revamped offense looks like tomorrow in Columbus. All right, let's head to the phones. Good morning. You're live on Let's Talk.
Thanks, gentlemen, for taking my call.
Thank you for making the call.
Well, I'm going to say this. My prediction is 41-17, Ohio State. Urban Meyer will be on Ohio State's sideline scouting his new team.
There you go.
And in closing, don't forget to remind everybody to get out and vote on Tuesday.
Yes, Election Day coming up on Tuesday. Also, turn your clocks back an hour. Ugh. I mean, I like the extra hour of sleep, but are you with me that we need to get rid of daylight saving time?
Yes and no. I mean, I'm out every morning delivering. It's a little rough right now till it gets daylight breaking, but
it is.
I mean, the fall back, the spring ahead, it all. I mean, if you overlook at the whole picture, it's not too bad. I mean, would you like the same routine every day?
I would. I would. I don't like the it messes up our sleep. And listen, again, you can adjust your delivery schedule, or your company could adjust the delivery schedule depending. I'm okay with, hey, let's shift a little bit with daylight. Well, it might make more sense to do it, you know, in 15-minute increments over monthly periods or whatever. I
agree with you. I think you're right. Get rid of it. Keep it the same. You know.
I just think there's a lot of studies showing that we do. It really does mess up our sleep patterns, and more studies are showing the importance of sleep, which is not boding well for me and my health, but to our overall health, getting a consistent sleep pattern is important, and this just disrupts it. We intentionally disrupt it twice a year. I think we need to stop.
I agree. Everybody have a safe Halloween tonight.
Hey, thank you very much. You as well, and enjoy the weekend. And, yes, thank you for the reminders.
Thank you. Later, guys.
We appreciate it. Yeah, Election Day is coming up on Tuesday. As Scott says, and 100% right, it is not an off-year election. Every year is an on-year. And I don't – the judge races are it is interesting to me. I'm not I don't have the solution there. I really don't like that we vote for it, and I also really don't like the idea of it just being a because it would be a political game, the so-called merit-based, and yep, we just appoint. Well, you're going to appoint, to a large degree, folks that you agree with or that you or just know, and I think that's problematic as well. I'm also I've had a couple of I think interesting discussions with people who I would say are more knowledgeable about the judicial system than I am. I think we should not have the I don't know if you want to use the term limits, but I do think we need to narrow the time that is assured of judges being in a given position. And again, the retention thing, it is rare that we don't retain judges. It happens. I mean, it's not like once in a blue moon stuff, but it's the overwhelming majority of the time judges are retained. And I am curious to see what happens here in Pennsylvania with the election on Tuesday. We'll probably delve more into that on Monday, as Mr. Giese will make his return on Monday. All right, we do have a lot of sports to get to, so we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll recap my enjoyable hockey night from last night. And we will preview a very busy weekend ahead in sports. You are listening to Let's Talk. We appreciate your doing so on this Friday morning on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead.
Ironhead and the Goon.
Exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox. The Fox Sports Weekend.
Is your Sunday home for the National Football League. All of the big teams.
Spins into the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City.
Big names.
Burrow throws over the middle into coverage, and it is caught. Unbelievable.
It's the NFL. Sundays
on Central PA Sports Authority.
The Fox Sports Weekend. Sports Radio 98.7. The Fox.
Fox Sports.
You know, a hotel's just a hotel. But a house is a home.
Decorated to perfection with pride, love, and attention to detail.
That's what you'll experience when you stay at the Keller House.
A delightful 1887 home in the village of Center Hall, Pennsylvania.
The Keller House is not just a bed and breakfast.
The moment you open the door, you'll be amazed at the historic, unique, cozy feel of this beautiful Victorian home.
The Keller House is just minutes away from State College. So if you're going to the game, turn your trip into a mini vacation.
The Keller House Bed and Breakfast.
Oh, did I mention the delicious homemade cooked breakfasts?
Mm-mm-mm. So good. Plus, you can choose from one of five themed bedrooms, each with its own bathroom and a central sitting room downstairs.
Wireless high-speed internet is also provided.
So, whether you're by yourself or bringing the whole family, the Keller House Bed and Breakfast in Center Hall will be your home away from home.
KellerHouseBB.com. That's KellerHouseBB.com. 109 West Church Street, Center Hall.
Looking for something different? But you want something that's quick and affordable that won't set you back in the pocketbook? Then you need to head down to Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub right next to the Center County Courthouse on North Allegheny Street in downtown Belfast. They feature only the best pizza in town and also the finest selections from Robin Hood Brewing Company, University Wines, and Big Spring Liquors. Come celebrate happy hour in Happy Valley every Tuesday through Saturday from 4 to 6 at Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub in downtown Belfast.
Eating healthy is important for us and for our animals. The Center Hall Farm Store knows this. Local, fresh ingredients are put in all of our feeds. Expert care from people ingrained in our community. If you haven't been to the Center Hall Farm Store yet, do yourself and your animals a favor and stop on in at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall. See what a difference the local touch can make in providing real quality. And be sure to check out our website at centerhallfarmstore.com.
Getting ready for tailgating or weekend? You need to stock up at the 64 Beer Store near Lamar. The 64 Beer Store has the coolest beer in the county. Over 400 selections, including IPAs, ciders, Oktoberfest beers, cocktails, and wines.
The 64 Beer Store carries ready-to-drink cocktails.
Conveniently located near Lamar on Nittany Valley Drive, just a half mile north from I-80 on Route 64. On the way from here to there. Stop in today.
This is Jim Galante from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, join me, Dustin Hawkinsmith, T. Frank Carr, Andy Shea, and Jeff Byers every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox and State College. We'll bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more on the Nittany Lions. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Fox Sports 98.7 for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Get up and get going with 98.7 The Fox.
It's Let's Talk here on a Friday morning. It is a Penn State football weekend, and it's a big one at that. The Nittany Lions looking to shock the world tomorrow in Columbus. Penn State has lost four straight. The Nittany Lions are 3-4 on the season, heading into the game with number one ranked, undefeated, returning national champion Ohio State. The Buckeyes are 7-0. Redshirt freshman quarterback Julian Sayin is having himself a season. He has completed 80% of his passes this year. The Alabama transfer is leading that Buckeyes offense very effectively, very efficiently. Kickoff tomorrow is set for 12 noon. That game will be televised on Fox. In college football last night, Texas San Antonio knocking off Tulane 48-26. Tonight, 25th-ranked Memphis will play at Rice, and North Carolina under Bill Belichick will visit Syracuse. Also, tomorrow, some games of note include a big one in Austin, where the 20th-ranked Longhorns welcome 9th-ranked Vanderbilt. Also, 10th-ranked Miami will be at SMU. Arizona State visits Iowa State. 16th-ranked Louisville will be at Virginia Tech. Might James Franklin be the next head coach at Virginia Tech? A lot of rumors swirling around Blacksburg that deal may be imminent. 5th-ranked Georgia will be at Florida. Arizona is at Colorado. 18th-ranked Oklahoma will visit 14th-ranked Tennessee, probably an elimination game there in terms of playoff contenders this season. 23rd-ranked USC will be at Nebraska. That also may be a playoff contending ending game for the loser there. 17th-ranked Cincinnati will be at 24th-ranked Utah. 8th-ranked Georgia Tech is undefeated. They'll visit North Carolina State. Other games in the Big Ten besides the Buckeyes and the Nittany Lions and that Nebraska-USC game will have second-ranked Indiana and its undefeated record on the line at Maryland, Rutgers at Illinois, Michigan State at Minnesota, and Purdue will be at Michigan tomorrow. Last night, Ohio State scored on each of its first two shots and grabbed a quick 2-0 lead over the Penn State men's hockey team. And then a Gavin McKenna goal was disallowed, waved off by goalie interference. And what are you going to do? One of those nights for Penn State on the road, just not going their way. But the Nittany Lions rallied. They settled in and yet again pulled out a come-from-behind victory as they scored the final three goals to take the 3-2 win in the Big Ten opener. McKenna with a beautiful pass after his disallowed goal to J.J. Weebush, who scored the first Penn State goal. That was in the second period. Dane Dowiak then tied the game on a beautiful pass from Nick Chin to Graves. And then it was freshman Luke Misa scoring his first collegiate goal for the game winner in the third period, his goal coming with 11:51 remaining in the third. Kevin Radler, after allowing those first two goals, was spectacular. 28 saves in net for Penn State. The Nittany Lions have now reeled off six consecutive wins. Penn State is 8-1 in the season and will wrap up that series in Columbus against Ohio State in a 6:30 face-off tonight. The State College football team will play a sub-regional game at McDowell next weekend. State College and McDowell both have this weekend off. McDowell was scheduled to play Erie Prep, but Prep said, no, never mind. So McDowell District 10 champs, State College District 9 champs, and again, they'll meet in a sub-regional next weekend, either Friday or Saturday at McDowell. We'll learn the day and time of that kickoff by Monday. Tonight, Belfont will host Greater Johnstown in the Quad A semifinals. That game will get underway at 7 o'clock at Rogers Stadium. The Red Raiders are 4-6 on the season. Johnstown is 1-9 on the year. The winner of tonight's game in Belfont will then take on top-seeded Juniata for the championship next weekend. Also, in the District 6 AA playoffs, Bald Eagle Area, going in as the 8th seed, will play at top-seeded Bishop McCourt in the quarterfinals tonight. That game will also get underway at 7 p.m. The Eagles are 5-5. The Crushers are a perfect 10-0 heading into the playoffs. Also tonight, Huntingdon will host Tyrone in a AAA semifinal game. That contest will get underway in Huntingdon at 7 o'clock as well tonight. Congratulations going out to the State College boys soccer team. The Little Lions defeating Altoona to win the District 6 Quad A Championship. 3-2, your final, as the Little Lions advance to the PIAA State Championships now. And they'll learn their first-round matchup, time and date, this weekend. The State College girls soccer team falling to Altoona 5-1 in the District 6 Quad A Championship game. Also, Juniata beat West Shamokin 5-0 to win the District 6 Boys AA Championship. Forest Hill shut out Juniata 4-0 to take the girls AA title. And Bishop Guilfoyle was a 2-0 winner over Richland in the girls single A title game. In the District 6 girls AA playoffs, Bald Eagle Area sweeping Central Cambria in girls volleyball last night, 3-0 to advance to the championship match against top-seeded Richland on Saturday. That title match will be at 2 p.m. Saturday at Altoona High School. Also in girls volleyball, the State College squad winning their sub-regional match over Erie McDowell last night, 3-0, as State College advances to the PIAA state playoffs now as well. The St. Joseph's girls volleyball team earlier this week losing 3-2 to Conemaugh Valley in the District 6 single A semifinals. The Big Ten Cross Country Championships will be held today. The men's race will be at 10:35 this morning. The women's race will be at 11:35. Both races will be televised on the Big Ten Network. The 12th-ranked Penn State women, led by returning first-team All-Big Ten runner Florence Karen. The men looking to improve on an eighth-place finish from a year ago. Again, that action will be held this morning and will be televised on the Big Ten Network. The 19th-ranked Penn State women's volleyball team is back in action tonight. The Nittany Lions will play at Michigan. That match will get underway at 6:30 this evening. The Nittany Lions are now 13-7 on the year, 7-3 in the Big Ten. The Wolverines come in at 14-7 overall, 4-6 in conference matches. Penn State will return home on Sunday afternoon to take on Indiana. That'll be a 4 o'clock match at Rec Hall on Sunday. Penn State field hockey team will host Rutgers in the regular season finale today at 5 p.m. The Nittany Lions are 7-9 on the season, 2-5 in the Big Ten. Rutgers is 8-8, 3-4 in conference games. Penn State needs a win to have a chance at making the Big Ten tournament next weekend. The Nittany Lions need a win and then some help to get into the seven-team field in the Big Ten tournament next weekend. Penn State women's hockey team is off to a remarkable 10-0 start this season. Penn State will take that undefeated record on the road to Robert Morris for games this afternoon and tomorrow evening. The sixth-ranked Nittany Lions will take on the Colonials at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and then again tomorrow at 5 o'clock in Pittsburgh. The Colonials are 5-5 on the season. The Penn State men's soccer team will play its final road game of the season tonight at Ohio State. That game will kick off at 7 o'clock in Columbus. The Nittany Lions are 5-7-3 on the season, 1-5-2 in Big Ten games. The Buckeyes are 5-9 on the year, 2-6 in Big Ten play. The Penn State women's soccer team will open up Big Ten tournament action tomorrow night. The Nittany Lions will face UCLA in the quarterfinals at 7:30 tomorrow night. That game will be played at Purdue's Folk Field. Penn State is the 6th seed, while the Bruins come in as the 3 seed. The winner will advance to next Thursday's semifinals against the winner of the Northwestern Michigan State game. This weekend, Washington goes into the Big Ten tournament as the number one seed. Penn State wrestler Luke Lilledahl has been named USA Wrestling's Athlete of the Week. The true sophomore, one of 3 Nittany Lions to win world gold in freestyle wrestling at the Under-23 World Championships last weekend. Lilledahl winning the title at 57 kilos with a 4-0 decision over Yuta Kikuchi of Japan. Lilledahl and the Nittany Lions are now 2 weeks away from the season opener. Penn State will take on Oklahoma on November 14th. At the Bryce Jordan Center. The Pittsburgh Penguins. Did I mention I enjoyed last night's hockey? It was fun. Penn State rallying from the 2-0 deficit to get the win at Ohio State. And the Pittsburgh Penguins also gave up the early lead, down 1-0 after the first period in the game against the Wild in Minneapolis. But the Penguins then scored the final 4 goals of the game, including all 3 goals in the third period. And the Penguins win it 4-1. Ladies and gentlemen, your Pittsburgh Penguins now sit atop the Metropolitan Division, and in fact, they lead the NHL with 18 points this season. Did not see this one coming. Ryan Shea scored the tying goal last night in the second period, and then the Penguins got third period goals from Brian Rust, Ben Kindle, and Anthony Mantha. Boy, Mantha's been playing some excellent hockey here for this first month of the season. Tristan Jarry, speaking of playing well, again, very strong in net. He stopped 26 of the 27 shots he faced last night. And yes, your Pittsburgh Penguins are rolling right now. They will play at Winnipeg tomorrow afternoon, and then we'll finish the road trip at Toronto on Monday night. I am enjoying hockey season. Philadelphia Flyers also winning a 4-1 contest last night. The Flyers defeating the Nashville Predators at home. Dan Vladar had 32 saves for Philadelphia. Trevor Zegras had a pair of goals to lead the Flyers offense. Jamie Drysdale and Travis Konechny also scored for Philadelphia. The Flyers will host Toronto tomorrow night, and then will host Calgary on Sunday night. NFL action last night, not much of a game in Miami. The Ravens pretty dominant from the start. They defeat the Dolphins 28-6. Lamar Jackson back at quarterback and looking very good. The hamstring did not seem to be an issue at all. He was running effectively. He threw 4 touchdown passes. And the Ravens, even though they are 3-5, have now won back-to-back games and are the betting favorites to still win the AFC North. Maybe the Steelers can use that for some extra motivation. It feels like they may need a little extra motivation against the Indianapolis Colts. Colts, if you haven't been paying attention, they just happen to have the best record in the National Football League at 7-1. The Colts will visit the Steelers for a 1 o'clock kickoff at Heinz at Acrisure Stadium on Sunday afternoon. Philadelphia Eagles have a bye week this week. Bye. Philadelphia 76ers are off to a 4-0 start. The Sixers will host the Boston Celtics tonight in a 7 o'clock tip-off. Also tonight, it is Game 6 of the World Series in Toronto. The Blue Jays lead the best of seven series, 3-2, and can win the championship with a victory tonight. The Dodgers need a win tonight to force a winner-takes-all Game 7 tomorrow night in Toronto. Tonight's game will begin a little after 8 o'clock. Let's go Blue Jays! Rooting for the Canadians, what can I tell you? And some fun news from the State College Spikes. The Spikes will become the State College 6-7 Baseball Club and host a 6-7 night on Sunday, June 7th. That would be 6-7-26. The team making the announcement yesterday, the Spikes, of course, in the MLB Draft League, will be facing the defending league champion West Virginia Black Bears in that game at Medler Field at Lebrano Park. As we mentioned yesterday, 6-7 is the word of the year, somehow, this past year. Yeah, the trend is likely to fade by then, but we'll look back fondly at the memory. Fondly, I tell you, teachers, of 6-7. The Spikes will be wearing 6-7 baseball club jerseys that will be auctioned off after that game. If you're interested in pre-ordering the 6-7 t-shirts, you can call the Spikes office at 814-272-1711. 272-1711. Some things going on around that promotion. Pretty fun stuff. Fans who are 6'7" tall or who are 67 years old will be eligible to purchase bullpen box seats for, you guessed it, $6.70 for the game on June 7th. Also, the first 670 fans in attendance will receive 6-7 themed sunglasses. Yeah, it'll be fun. 6-7, of course, the viral internet trend that originated from rapper, I don't even know, Skrilla, and his song Doot Doot. Yeah, I don't know either. When asked what fans will think about 6-7 night, Spikes president and general manager Scott Walker said, 6-7. We're going to look back fondly on it, teachers. That's what I'm telling you. We will take a break here. Be back with a final open line segment. If there's anything you want to share about upcoming events this weekend, I know there is a lot going on. Not just the football game tomorrow and trick or treating tonight, but if you want to share something going on with you, your organization, by all means, you can share that, 814-954-7266, and then John Ziegler will join us at 9 o'clock. You're listening to Let's Talk on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
We don't just talk sports. The Fox. We live it. Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox.
Hi, listen, if you're considering an assisted living facility for yourself or a loved one, it's important that you choose a highly rated facility. And Celebrationville of Nittany Valley is one of those facilities. U.S. News & World Report 2025 ranked Celebrationville of Nittany Valley as the best assisted living facility. Now, that's a great accolade. Celebrationville of Nittany Valley specializes in enhanced personal and and memory care located in State College. From the moment you arrive, you'll find your or your family member's needs are met with the utmost attention and mindfulness. Nestled in a quiet, modern setting, Celebration Villa of Nittany Valley offers a warm and friendly community that's close enough to town to keep you or your family member connected, yet far enough away to provide that peaceful country feeling. For details, go to CelebrationVillaOfNittanyValley.com. That's one word, CelebrationVillaOfNittanyValley.com. Or call one of our friendly staff members for leasing and sales. Call 814-235-7675. Celebration Villa of Nittany Valley.
Save big and head to your local Toro dealer, Maxwell Equipment, for the sales event going on now. Stop in today and get up to $1,500 off select Z-Master mowers and Grandstand, Multi-Force, Stand-On, plus $500 off select attachments. Visit Maxwell Equipment on Shiloh Road for more details on promotions and financing offers. Toro, count on it.
Be a part of the best event of the winter, Happy Valley Comic Con, February 28 and March 1 at Nittany Valley Sports Center. 100,000 square feet of fun with sci-fi and fantasy fans from across the region. If you're a vendor of anything looking to reach this energized audience, open space is currently available. Go to happyvalleycomiccon.com. Click on the Vendors tab for information. Reserve your space today and get ready for a weekend of action and profit. happyvalleycomiccon.com. Click on the Vendors tab. Happy Valley Comic Con, February 28 and March 1 at Nittany Valley Sports Center.
Join us for the Goon and Ironhead Show, Tuesday and Thursday afternoons from 2 to 4, right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Goon loves Philadelphia sports, I love Pittsburgh sports, we both love Penn State sports, and we both just like talking sports, and you never know where the discussion will take us. That's part of the fun. Join us for the good times, Tuesday and Thursday afternoon from 2 to 4, right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
You know, a hotel's just a hotel, but a house is a home. Decorated to perfection with pride, love, and attention to detail. That's what you'll experience when you stay at the Keller House.
A delightful 1887 home in the village of Center Hall, Pennsylvania.
The Keller House is not just a bed and breakfast. The moment you open the door, you'll be amazed at the historic, unique, cozy feel of this beautiful Victorian home. The Keller House is just minutes away from State College. So if you're going to the game, turn your trip into a mini vacation. The Keller House Bed and Breakfast. Oh, did I mention the delicious homemade cooked breakfasts? So good. Plus, you can choose from one of five themed bedrooms, each with its own bathroom and a central sitting room downstairs. Wireless high-speed internet is also provided. So, whether you're by yourself or bringing the whole family, the Keller House Bed and Breakfast in Center Hall will be your home away from home. KellerHouseBB.com. That's KellerHouseBB.com. 109 West Church Street, Center Hall.
It is a Halloween Friday edition of Let's Talk here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Jeff Byers with you. Little open phone time here at 814-954-7266. We'll likely have a little open phone time at the end of hour two this morning as well. That'll depend a little bit on just kind of where we're at with the interview with John Ziegler, but should have a little open phone time in the final segment of this morning's big show. Estimated 41 million children will be out trick-or-treating tonight. About three-quarters of American households expected to participate in trick-or-treat night. The spending for this year's Halloween is expected to reach $13.1 billion with a B. $13.1 billion. If that is in fact the case, that would be up 13% from a year ago, families. Now, this is candy and costumes and decorations. And kudos to those of you that go the extra mile on the decorations. We have a couple of folks in our neighborhood. A lot of folks put up some decorations. We normally do. We have not gotten around to it. I'm not sure if maybe this afternoon we'll get a couple of things up. But we have a couple that go all out, a couple of different families in our neighborhood. I mean, the entire yard is just filled with Halloween decorations. So the spending here is on costumes, decorations, and candy. And they break it down. Not sure where this survey... Yeah, I don't know where this survey came from or where these numbers... It's a news story, but it's not citing where the numbers come from. But according to this story, the American family will spend, or families will spend, $4.3 billion on costumes this year, $4.2 billion on decorations, and $3.9 billion on candy. Well, that's a fun night. Hopefully you get into it and you have some fun with it. That is what it is all about. But be safe. Take your time. Be aware of the weather conditions. Again, wind probably the biggest thing you're going to have to contend with. You know, dress appropriately. It'll be chilly in the 40s. But just have fun. Take it easy. Enjoy the candy. And, yes, hand out candy. None of the toothbrushes or anything else. Hand out candy. That's what Halloween demands. A couple of other just news and notes. President Trump, did you see the, he ended his Asian tour after agreeing to de-escalate trade tensions with China. Seems like the meeting went well, although, again, whether or not China upholds any part of the agreement that it reportedly made, always got to be dubious about the follow-through with China, because they pretty much never follow through on promises made. So we'll keep an eye on that. But China says it will reduce and do what it can to prevent fentanyl from getting into the United States. But then the president was handing out the treats. They did a little trick-or-treating at the White House yesterday. Regardless, hopefully, even if you are a Trump hater, you could at least appreciate. That just looked fun. And that has to be a thrill for any kid to get a candy bar from the President of the United States. And I don't care who the president is. I don't care what your thoughts are on the president. That's a pretty cool thing for a kid to get a candy bar from the President of the United States. That was cool. That was fun. This theft at the Louvre is just remarkable on so many different fronts. French prosecutors say they have now arrested five more people in connection with the jewel heist at the Louvre. They say the investigation is ongoing. Three of the four suspected robbers are now in custody, according to the prosecutors. However, and I find this very interesting, and I'm listening to all of the experts say that, yeah, there's a chance they will never actually get the gems back. None of the jewels to this point, according to the authorities, have been recovered. which is, to me, amazing. And again, listening to the experts, they're like, yeah, that's not unexpected, and they seem to feel there's a pretty good chance that the goods will never be recovered, at least the majority of them. It was about $102 million in jewels that they got away with in the heist. So I just, I don't know. That case is, it feels like something out of a movie, and it's been fascinating to learn a little bit more about the jewelry heist industry. And apparently it's a pretty big industry out there. Would not necessarily have thought it is quite as commonplace, relatively speaking, as it is. A couple of things, just reminders. Again, trick-or-treating. Most of our neighborhood will be trick-or-treating from 6 to 8 tonight. Also this weekend, we need to set our clocks back an hour, Saturday night into Sunday morning, officially at 2 a.m. Sunday. We will go back an hour. I am a huge proponent of we need to do away with daylight saving time. President Trump has said he wants to do away with it. There seems to be a growing movement to do that. Let's go ahead and make that happen. And had a caller earlier this morning reminding us Election Day is coming up on Tuesday, and we will see what the turnout is. I know what I'm expecting. It'll be disappointing again, but we'll keep our fingers crossed. I'll keep my fingers crossed that we actually get a good turnout. Workers with an Arizona-based consulting firm conducting a voter registration drive ahead of the election, and they tried to submit fake registrations in Pennsylvania in an effort to earn more money. This according to the state attorney general, who makes the allegations in a criminal complaint filed earlier this month. Election officials across Pennsylvania say the problems with these types of third-party voter registration drives are not limited to this incident of alleged fraud. Oh, great. add it to the list of concerns with the elections being on the up and up. Officials say systemic problems in the way third-party voter registration organizations operate are what results in street canvassers submitting incomplete or invalid registrations, even when it does not rise to the level of fraud. They say the practice floods county election offices with extra work. Oh, good, because that's what they need, as they have to then sort through those registrations. And Spotlight Pennsylvania story says the changes in Pennsylvania law just kind of added to the problems, and maybe we need some changes to get rid of these third-party registration organizations or to better regulate them. It is a complicated little world we're living in. A big part of the criminal case that is filed in this particular case is around a Pennsylvania law that says it is illegal to pay canvassers on the basis of how many voter registration forms they collect. Investigators say canvassers receive bonuses for extra applications that they submit, and in some cases were threatened with termination if they did not gather enough. Well, yeah, that you could see where that would lead to some fraud. One canvasser who was not charged told investigators that three forms would get them $40, and if the canvasser collected 15 or 16 in a single shift, they would be paid as if they had worked 10 hours, even if they worked less than 10 hours. Ugh. I mean, just ugh. We've got too many issues. The election process, it really should not be nearly as complicated or as problematic as we are making it here in the U.S. or in Pennsylvania in particular. We need to go back to just, we have an election day. Can we just go back to that? That we were not having problems with that. All right, we're taking a break here. John Ziegler on the other side of this timeout. You're listening to Let's Talk on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Fox Sports.
Bigger and better than ever, it's the 2026 Happy Valley Comic Convention, February 28th and March 1st at Nittany Valley Sports Center. 100,000 square feet of fun with special guest Tricia Helfer, the gorgeous Cylon from Battlestar Galactica, and Tracy Coco from Star Trek, along with actors from Pokemon, Dragon Ball Z, and other Japanese series. Collectibles, discussions, artist costume contest, and much more. Get your tickets starting now at $8 at HappyValleyComicCon.com. Kids 10 and under free on Sunday. HappyValleyComicCon.com. Made possible by a grant from the Happy Valley Adventure Bureau.
Eating healthy is important for us and for our animals. The Center Hall Farm Store knows this. Local, fresh ingredients are put in all of our feeds. Expert care from people ingrained in our community. If you haven't been to the Center Hall Farm Store yet, do yourself and your animals a favor and stop on in at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall. See what a difference the local touch can make in providing real quality. And be sure to check out our website at centerhallfarmstore.com.
Looking for something different? But you want something that's quick and affordable that won't set you back in the pocketbook? Then you need to head down to Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub right next to the Center County Courthouse on North Allegheny Street in downtown Belfast. They feature only the best pizza in town and also the finest selections from Robin Hood Brewing Company, University Wines, and Big Spring Liquors. Come celebrate happy hour in Happy Valley every Tuesday through Saturday from 4 to 6 at Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub in downtown Belfast.
Getting ready for tailgating or weekend? You need to stock up at the 64 Beer Store near Lamar. The 64 Beer Store has the coldest beer in the county. Over 400 selections, including IPAs, ciders, Oktoberfest beers, cocktails, and wines.
The 64 Beer Store carries ready-to-drink cocktails.
Conveniently located near Lamar on Nittany Valley Drive, just a half mile north from I-80 on Route 64. On the way from here to there. Stop in today.
Save big and head to your local Toro dealer, Maxwell Equipment, for the sales event going on now. Stop in today and get up to $1,500 off select Z-Master mowers and Grandstand Multi-Force stand-ons, plus $500 off select attachments. Visit Maxwell Equipment on Shiloh Road for more details on promotions and financing offers. Toro, count on it.
WFXX, once again,
your sports radio.
Broadcasting live, loud and proud from Central PA Sports Authority.
Woo-hoo!
WFXS America.
98.7 The Fox. It is Halloween Day here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Jeff Byers with you, and I believe we are joined. Man, it's been one thing after another. John Ziegler, kind enough to join us over the phone line, puts up with the postponement, puts up with the phone problem we're having getting out here from the studio. John, we appreciate your patience. Good morning. How are you?
Well, it's 6 a.m. here in Los Angeles.
I know it.
Good morning to you, Joe.
I really appreciate the time, as you know, forever appreciative of the work you've done in getting the truth out there in this Jerry Sandusky saga, this ongoing saga. I guess, John, let's just start with this most recent interview with, I guess it's not finalized, it's the soon-to-be, I guess, ex-wife of Ryan Rittmeyer, who, again, is alleged victim, well, I guess, legally is victim 10 in the Jerry Sandusky case in the trial. I finally was able to listen to the entire interview. She, I will say, comes across extremely well, extremely earnest in the way she came to the conclusion that she did, which, like pretty much everybody that actually sits down and takes a look at this case, is, oh, my God, Jerry Sandusky is actually completely innocent of the charges against him. I guess I want to start with, how did this interview, I know you go over it in the podcast, but for folks that haven't heard it, explain how this interview came about.
Well, that's actually an important part of this story, and people can listen to the whole thing for free without even any ads at our podcast, which is called With the Benefit of Hindsight, which is a 22-part epic podcast about the entire Penn State Joe Paterno Jerry Sandusky saga. And Jasmine is her name. Jasmine is the still currently wife of Ryan Rittmeyer, so-called victim number 10, who didn't just come to an opinion that her husband lied and that Jerry Sandusky was in fact innocent of all the allegations, not just his. But she was there, I mean, during literally the police interviews at the very beginning. She was the person who told Ryan that Jerry Sandusky had a person that she had no knowledge of at all, didn't even know how to pronounce his name, had been arrested back in November of 2011. This happened to have occurred the week before they got married, so she has a very, very strong recollection of all of this. And the reason why this interview came about is incredibly telling and very important part of the story on multiple levels. I have actually interviewed Ryan Rittmeyer earlier this year for about 2.5 hours. That interview has never been made public. The reason why that interview has never been made public, even though I have it and I would like to make it public, is that it was set up by, I guess, what I would call the Sandusky family investigator, Frank Parlato, a guy I know you're familiar with, I presume you've interviewed before,
yep,
who, in my opinion, has completely duped the Sandusky family into believing that he's somehow going to save this horrendous situation. I was very hopeful that Frank would be competent and reliable. I've come to conclude that he is both a lunatic and a fraud, and he has tried to facilitate Ryan Rittmeyer's a recantation of his trial testimony, and had done some things that were completely inappropriate, including having him live at his house in the Florida Keys for several months, promised him money in payment for his participation in a documentary. Bizarrely, Ryan ended up dating the daughter of Frank's close female companion. I mean, there's all sorts of very big problems here. And I had been informed of all this, and I said, well, let me interview Ryan and see where he's at, and maybe we can convince him that Jerry is actually innocent and that he can fully recant his testimony. And I did this interview, and it was extraordinary in many ways. Bizarrely, Frank was more protective of Ryan than he was of Jerry Sandusky, in my opinion, because Ryan, at that point, had still not 100% recanted his testimony. He recanted a lot of it. Frankly, in my opinion, he made up a new story as a fig leaf, because I think he wants to remain in his mind psychologically some sort of a victim in this situation. But it was very clear after the 2.5-hour interview with Ryan that he was never abused by Jerry Sandusky, which did not surprise me at all. The interview completely exposed him, but Frank objected to me releasing the interview, and I didn't want to cause a problem with Jerry's appeal. So I did not have not yet released and don't have any imminent plans to release that interview, but we did a podcast episode about it, and Jasmine happened to research the Jerry Sandusky case, listened to the previous previous episode of the podcast, contacted me. We had a conversation. She told me that she had concluded from numerous sources, including Mark Pendergrass's book, The Most Hated Man in America, which concludes that Jerry Sandusky is innocent, that based upon her own experiences with Ryan, Ryan was clearly not a victim of Jerry Sandusky, and that now she is convinced that Jerry Sandusky is innocent. And so I said, well, do you want to do an interview? She said, not really. But I was able to convince her that, you know, this is a good idea for the purposes of justice. She went ahead and did it, and she did an extraordinary job. And I think anyone that cares about this case ought to listen to the whole thing. It ends very, very emotionally and very powerfully. And you can listen to it at, again, our website. Our website is framingpaterno.com, but the podcast is With the Benefit of Hindsight.
Yeah, I think it is fair to say that she is, strongly believes in Jerry Sandusky's innocence and feels horribly for the circumstance that he continues to face. I actually thought one of the more fascinating parts, though, for me, John, listening to the interview, was at the beginning of it, where one of the more telling things to me about why her story is to be believed, and really this goes to a lot of the accusers. Ryan Rittmeyer, I do believe, and I think she believes, and I'm assuming you believe, was in fact sexually abused in his childhood. It just wasn't by Jerry Sandusky. And I think that's the case. I mean, when you look at Aaron Fisher, I think several of the individuals, and my guess is somewhere in their mind, they're like, well, this at least gets me some vindication. I'm getting some sort of a payment for the abuse I suffered, even if the person that did the abuse isn't the person suffering. That's my takeaway from this. But Jasmine was told, I guess, by Ryan, it sounds like fairly early in their relationship, that he was abused. But again, it wasn't Jerry Sandusky. His name never was mentioned, which is just bizarre if he's sharing his tales of sexual abuse, that he would never mention the Sandusky case, which then he testifies happened over and over and over again.
Jeff, you make a really important point that I don't think very many people have understood how significant it is to how the Sandusky saga, this fiasco, was allowed to happen. I 100% am convinced that Aaron Fisher, victim number one, was sexually abused by his stepfather, Eric Daniels, who actually did go to prison for child sex abuse. The media never told you this. And when I found that out, that was one of a critical moment for me in this entire case. When Eric Daniels pled guilty to 100 counts of child sex abuse, including against his own children, although not specifically against Aaron, the hair on my forearm stood up, because I'm like, oh my gosh, that's how this happened. And that's how Aaron was able to be a plausible sex abuse victim against Jerry Sandusky. Ryan has a very similar story. He had told his wife, Jasmine, about this episode involving an uncle when I believe he was 8 years old. Now, the nature of the abuse is a little bit vague to me, but he describes it as abuse, and he absolutely told Jasmine about it, but he never told her about Jerry Sandusky. And then when she tells him Jerry Sandusky was arrested, he says, that's impossible. I know Jerry Sandusky. Jerry Sandusky is a great guy. He would never do anything that to anybody. He says this as an adult. and then there's a series of machinations where investigators come to, and this is, of course, after Jerry's arrest, desperately come to talk to Ryan, and I think he gets cold feet, and he tells them a non-story where there is no actual abuse. Even Jasmine was very confused by it. And then a few weeks later, I think Ryan figures out that this is a money-making proposition and decides to become a victim of Jerry Sandusky. And I don't think it's just Aaron and Ryan. Part of the perfect storm for Jerry Sandusky in this situation was the Second Mile Charity. The Second Mile Charity, of course, was obviously a charity for at-risk kids, boys and girls. Well, let's face facts. especially in central Pennsylvania, when you have at-risk boys, you're going to have a lot of sexual abuse, a lot of abuse in a lot of ways. That's why they're at-risk kids.
Yeah.
And then when they're adults and their lives are a mess, and they're, you know, divorced or unemployed or doing drugs or whatever, all the problems that go along with a difficult at-risk childhood, they're going to be in a situation where they might look at the Jerry Sandusky circumstance and go, I see an opportunity here. And Ryan Rittmeyer, who had previously gone to prison, it's important to point that out. That's how pathetic the prosecution case was. That, you know, they expected that when Jerry got arrested, they were going to get this cascade of much better accusers than what they had at the time of his arrest. And all they got were numbers 9 and 10. And, you know, Ryan had gone to prison for theft, and Sebastian Payton, number 9, his mother has now completely recanted her testimony. She was the last prosecution witness at trial, and she's alleging a conspiracy with the prosecutors to profit from Sebastian Payton making $20 million from this case. But your point is incredibly important. I think it's exactly what happened here. It's a way that a lot of the accusers were able to rationalize what they did. Hey, you know, I wasn't abused by Sandusky. He looks to me like he must have been a pedophile, because the whole world's telling me he's a pedophile. So I'm not putting an innocent man in prison, and I'm getting paid for my prior sexual abuse. It just wasn't by Jerry Sandusky, and that's how they rationalized what they did here.
Well, and John, to me, a lot of these stories were basically fed by prosecutors. To your point there, it wasn't, and, you know, we made this point years ago on the show, but there's a difference in terms of the story being told. If I come to you and say, John, what happened when you were with Jerry Sandusky, and you say, all right, this is what happened, he abused me this way. That isn't what occurred. Almost to a person, initially, they're asked, what happened with you and Jerry Sandusky, and it was nothing. In a couple of cases, it was, well, he put his hand on my knee,
right.
And, you know, by all admissions, Jerry is a touchy-feely person. He's a caring
right.
individual, all of that. And then it is when the prosecutors say, well, we know he abused other boys. Are you sure he didn't do anything with you? And then, well, you keep leading, and it's like, well, in some of these other cases, this is what he did. Oh, well, my God, if he did that, I want to cooperate. I want to help put this person that behind bars. I don't want to let somebody free. And then so you start to think, I think even with Mike McQuarrie, again, the story of the grand jury presentment, which, John, I swear is still the story that the overwhelming majority of the general public, hey, what happened at Penn State? I don't really know. I know the assistant coach saw Sandusky anally raping a boy. Well, not at all what happened, but that's what gets put into the grand jury presentment. And to this day, I think most of America would be shocked to learn, one, that is the one case that he wasn't convicted on, Jerry Sandusky. Two, Mike McQuarrie is adamant that he never saw that. He heard slapping sounds. Very different than seeing anal penetration. I go right on down the line with each story. But the great frustration is the people that think they know what happened here, they just have the basic facts wrong.
Well, you said a lot there. Let me try to break it down. The first point about being manipulated by prosecutors, this is not just theoretical. There's a tape of this happening with victim number 4, who was so important to the prosecution that he usurped victim number 1, Aaron Fisher, as the first person to testify at Jerry Sandusky's trial. There is a tape of prosecutors inadvertently, because they thought that the recording was off,
yep,
conspiring with the attorney of victim number 4. By the way, why did victim number 4 even have an attorney and an interview to determine whether or not he was a victim of Jerry Sandusky? That doesn't make any sense
yep.
at all.
Yep.
But we have this on tape where the prosecutors are saying that they conspired is not in any way an exaggeration. They're basically saying to each other and to the lawyer, hey, can we lie to victim number four about what other evidence we have to convince him that he's not alone in this?
Yep.
And voila, they say to the lawyer, oh, yeah, sure, we do that all the time, no problem. So then, and this is all when they thought the recorder was off. This should have been a massive bombshell at trial, yet the media, because they thought they already knew the result of all this, didn't care. They go back to victim number four, and suddenly he, after trying to get him to become a victim, becomes a victim in a very horrific way that ends up being the number one testifier at Jerry Sandusky's trial. Now, so this is... And that's what we have on tape, Jeff. That's on tape.
Yeah.
So if you listen to Jasmine's interview, it's very clear the same thing happened to Ryan. As far as Mike McQuarrie is concerned, the first episode of our podcast with the benefit of hindsight, as I think you know, is called The Date. And to me, this is my biggest mistake in the entire case because I was late in figuring this all out. We know for sure that Mike McQuarrie got the date, the month, and the year of that episode catastrophically wrong once. I am convinced he got it catastrophically wrong twice.
Yep.
In a way that proves that he did not go see Joe Paterno the next morning. He waited 6 weeks to go see Joe Paterno. That is not remotely consistent with anything that was in the grand jury presentment. And we still don't even have Mike McQuarrie's grand jury testimony because, I'm quite certain it would not be good for the prosecution. Mike McQuarrie did not see a sexual assault, and anybody who has looked at that situation objectively knows that to be 1,000% the case.
Yes, and the other part of that, John, is, again, I think Mike was genuinely trying to be helpful, and I think that I don't even know if initially the prosecution... Maybe I'm giving them too much of the benefit of the doubt, but I think that they honestly thought that they had somebody who was a sexual predator. One of the things, just looking back on the entire case, John, that I also think, in retrospect, everybody jumped to the conclusion that, well, that kind of shows he's guilty. I actually think just the opposite, again, with the benefit of hindsight, is that interview that Sandusky gave with Joe Amendola present, his lawyer, to Bob Costas. And again, I'm listening to that at the time, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is horrific. And then you think back... And it's like, well, what the prosecution, though, is telling you is that Jerry Sandusky was this master manipulator, and for all of these years he fooled people, and he knew how to work the individuals and get them to trust him, and then, boy, he was a smooth talker, and he knew how to do this and that, and hey, he got him over, and he got the children close to him, and he got the parents' trust, and he knows how to pull it off. And then in the biggest moment of his life, he forgets how to manipulate. In the biggest moment of his life, he comes across as somebody that is clueless on how to handle a big-time interview. Like, it makes no sense in retrospect.
Well, in my defense, that was my reaction at the time.
I was mine as well, and I know Jerry. I mean, I've known him since I was a kid.
No, but what I mean by, and I didn't know Jerry at all at that time, my reaction was kind of what you just said. I had presumed that Jerry was guilty until the Costas interview. But to me, the Costas interview was so bad, I'm like, wait a minute. We have to understand that what we're being told here is that obviously this was going on for 40-some years. If Jerry Sandusky was really doing this, he could not have possibly been this bad at answering simple questions like, are you sexually attracted to young boys? And also, by the way, if this was all true, he would be thinking every single day about why he's sexually attracted to young boys. This would be a huge part of his persona.
Yeah.
He would not be thinking about it, for several seconds before finally answering. And by the way, it is important to point out that prior to that, Costas asked him whether or not he was guilty. He said no, definitively.
Right.
And also, as you well know, Jerry Sandusky tends to hesitate on almost anything you ask him. You ask him what time of day it is, he might respond in a very similar way. But, you know, I wasn't convinced Jerry was innocent based upon the Costas interview, but I did start to think, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense at all based upon the narrative we're being told. And by the way, I should point out that Bob Costas has done another interview with the Benefit of Hindsight podcast earlier this year, episode number 20. I'm in constant contact with Bob Costas to this day, which is extraordinary. I mean, since he is the person that is most associated with Jerry Sandusky's guilt in the minds of the vast majority of the public and even some of the media, Bob is very open-minded about this. I don't want to speak for what Bob's true opinions are, but you can listen to episode 20 and an extraordinary exchange where for the first time, and I've been hoping for this for many, many years, Bob starts to ask me questions about the case, and it's clear that Bob's eyes are open, and I think, you know, again, people can conclude for themselves, but I'm very confident, I've said this publicly previously, that if Bob Costas himself had been on Jerry Sandusky's jury, based upon what Bob Costas currently knows, he would never have voted to convict beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah, I wonder, John, how many of the jurors that were on that case, knowing what is now out there, I don't know how many of them are following all of your work and Frank's and everything going on in the case. I do wonder how many of them now would at least have serious questions and would change that verdict.
I doubt that any of them are following it because, you know, the mainstream news media has a complete lockdown on this case. They've been told that this is, a fait accompli. There's no question about this. Penn State, of course, has gone along with this narrative in every possible way. I mean, we can't even get, the football field named for Joe Paterno, for goodness sakes. Can't get the statue back. No one even knows where the statue is. I mean, Penn State's involvement in this is paramount. Penn State is perceived as pleading guilty to everything, not just for Sandusky, but essentially for Paterno and for the administrators. Yeah. And in the public's mind, that's game, set, match. The public cannot understand that Penn State had a perverse, upside-down self-interest here. The people at Penn State, especially after they panicked and fired Joe Paterno in one of the dumbest decisions ever made in the history of academia, which is really saying something, after that happened, they were all invested in not having screwed up. And that's why the free report came down the way that it did. It was paid for by Penn State, giving Penn State exactly what they wanted. The public can't understand that. Even the media can't understand that. But Penn State's incentive structure is upside down in this case. They have an incentive to be seen as guilty, because if they weren't guilty, they threw all their best people under the bus in the middle of a moral panic when they were innocent, and they gave away hundreds of millions of dollars in money that nobody deserved. So to me it's very simple, but to me, most people cannot understand Penn State's involvement on this. And once you do understand Penn State and their perverse self-interest, everything else starts to really come to peace. All the pieces of this puzzle come into place.
I want to pick up on that. Can you stay with us for one more segment, John?
Sure.
All right, we're going to take a break. I want to pick up on that because when you look at the people that were prosecuted, not just Jerry Sandusky, and although Paterno wasn't legally prosecuted, certainly publicly he was at least persecuted. What is amazing when you look at Tim Curley, Graham Spanier, Gary Schultz, all of the individuals, the people closest to them, stuck by them. They still stick by them. They're like, no, we know these are good, honorable, decent people. Then you look at the prosecution, you look at the victims, and you see quite a different setup. I want to delve a little bit into that and that angle of this case as we continue. You are listening to Let's Talk on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead.
Ironhead and the Goon.
Exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox.
Kevin Harlan here from Monday Night Football on Westwood One. Join us all season long for primetime action on the road to the playoffs and Super Bowl 60. Each week, Hall of Fame quarterback Kurt Warner and I will have the call of great matchups, along with Mike Golic, senior and junior, in the studio. Don't miss out on the great NFL tradition that is Monday Night Football.
Catch all the action all season long. Sports Radio 98.7, The Fox.
Looking for something different? But you want something that's quick and affordable that won't set you back in the pocketbook? Then you need to head down to Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub right next to the Center County Courthouse on North Allegheny Street in downtown Belfast. They feature only the best pizza in town and also the finest selections from Robin Hood Brewing Company, University Wines, and Big Spring Liquors. Come celebrate Happy Hour in Happy Valley every Tuesday through Saturday from 4 to 6 at Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub in downtown Belfast.
Eating healthy is important for us and for our animals. The Center Hall Farm Store knows this. Local, fresh ingredients are put in all of our feeds. Expert care from people ingrained in our community. If you haven't been to the Center Hall Farm Store yet, do yourself and your animals a favor and stop on in at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall. See what a difference the local touch can make in providing real quality. And be sure to check out our website at centerhallfarmstore.com.
Getting ready for tailgating or weekend? You need to stock up at the 64 Beer Store near Lamar. The 64 Beer Store has the coldest beer in the county. Over 400 selections, including IPAs, ciders, Oktoberfest beers, cocktails, and wines.
The 64 Beer Store carries ready-to-drink cocktails.
Conveniently located near Lamar on Nittany Valley Drive, just a half mile north from I-80 on Route 64. On the way from here to there. Stop in today.
This is Jim Galante from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, join me, Dustin Hawkinsmith, T. Frank Carr, Andy Shea, and Jeff Byers every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox and State College. We'll bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more on the Nittany Lions. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Fox Sports 98.7 for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
It is our Halloween edition of Let's Talk. Again, Scott Giese off this week. He will be back on Monday. And we are joined by John Ziegler, and thrilled to have him on with the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, is where you will find his truly remarkable work on this case. Before I get into kind of everything being flipped backwards in this case, John, there was one thing that just it has really bothered me more than it should, and I'm usually pretty good at letting online comments go, but I did see somebody responded to your post with this interview, and they're like, give me a break, Sandusky's guilty, there was a preponderance of physical evidence in the case. And you did respond, actually there was no physical evidence, which is one of the reasons those of us that believe he's innocent have a great deal of trouble with the way this thing was handled. But I do think that's a significant point to make, is to this date there has been no physical evidence, none. With all of these victims out there and all of these different cases, nobody could produce a text, anything showing that, yeah, something happened, or Sandusky showed guilt or remorse over an action. And it just, that is not the way these cases work. You look at every other pedophile case that's out there, and then same thing when you look at, the family, the people close to Sandusky, and then I do want to get into the prosecutors in the case there. But let's just start with the physical evidence, John. To this date, there has been no physical evidence produced against Jerry Sandusky.
Well, your point is extremely well taken, but you missed, I think, the most significant element of this. No pornography. That is
none.
Completely impossible. Impossible. I have never found, and I've been looking now, because I've been on this case for 14 years, I have never found a serial pedophile case in the modern history of America where there was not one shred of pornography that was ever found anywhere. In fact, the only pornography in this entire case, and this is not an exaggeration, was found in emails between judges and prosecutors and investigators, and nothing involving Jerry Sandusky. That is, I defy anyone to find another case like that. It's just not possible. And so, yeah, and it's ironically one of the greatest problems with Jerry Sandusky's appeal. The first problem is that he's afraid to go into federal court, because if you go into federal court and you lose, you have nothing else to do the rest of your life. You're going to die in prison. He naively keeps thinking he's going to get a fair deal in Pennsylvania, which is impossible. But when you appeal a criminal conviction, generally you go after the physical evidence that was used against you. But there is no physical evidence. So I've described trying to appeal this case like shooting ghosts, since this is Halloween. You're trying to shoot ghosts here. There's nothing but testimony that was ever changing and not credible from people who got paid millions and millions of dollars. It's almost impossible. Now, there are very good bases for appeals, like the Brady violations of the prosecution, but this is part of the perfect storm here, and it can never be forgotten. It can never be forgotten. There was no pornography in this case involving Jerry Sandusky.
Which, as you said, is truly extraordinary in a case like this. It just, that is not what pedophiles do with their off time. And I've had some people, well, he didn't have to because of...
Oh, my God. Yeah, okay. That is the most... That, to me, is an indication where people just, for some reason, want to believe this dark fairy tale. And that is maybe the most mysterious part, psychologically, of this entire situation for me, that I have been stunned by just how much the general public wants to believe this story was true. And I think it's mostly because of the Joe Paterno angle. I think that because Joe Paterno was taken off of his pedestal, people were able to think of themselves as being better than the great Joe Paterno, because at least they never enabled a serial pedophile to get away with their crimes in order to protect the football program. I mean, I really think that's the only logical explanation I can come up with, because people, you would think that people would be saying to me and others who are in agreement with me, fantastic, this didn't really happen. That's great news. But very, very, very few people are in that category.
As you say, everything about this case just seems upside down. To that end, John, I do want to get in a little bit. When you look at the severe lapses in judgment, I'm trying to be kind, to the prosecutors, and some of the problems they have when it comes to ethics, and then you look... And even those close to the prosecutors are like, maybe we'll take a step back. What, to me, to this day, is extremely telling. Now, it may not be legally relevant, but to me it is very relevant in terms of trying to determine where the truth tellers are in this case. Those that are closest to Jerry Sandusky, his wife, his family, when you look at most cases, the overwhelming majority of cases where you have child predators, those closest to them start to piece stuff together like, oh my God, yep. And you get divorces, you get, I don't want to have anything to do with them. This is exactly the opposite here. Well, no, we know this didn't happen. And again, I know not legally relevant. I'm just telling you, I know Dottie Sandusky.
Right.
There is a 0% chance that she is standing by somebody that she even thinks for a moment might have one time, maybe, possibly, abused a child. Like, that is not who she is. Not possible.
Right. Well, Jeff, you've hit on one of my favorite ways to describe this case. I'm not even 100% sure you're fully aware of how much I've used this logical device to try to convince people. Forget about all the facts of the actual case. Let's just look at what has happened since the criminal trial. And I'm a big believer that you learn a lot after a criminal trial or after an election or after somebody gets fired. You know, the truth eventually comes out, right, if you pay attention long enough. So let's do a little exercise here real quick. So, as you've already referenced, Dottie Sandusky not only has not divorced Jerry Sandusky, she still lives in State College, right? Which is insane, right?
Yeah. In the same house that they lived in at the time he was prosecuted.
Right, which is, it's impossible for someone who, if they had any belief that they were part of the guilt of their husband, they would move if only for make their lives easier. But she has zero guilt, zero consciousness of guilt. And is 100% supportive of her husband. But that's just the beginning. Other than Matt Sandusky, who we've completely discredited 1,000 times over, and everyone in this family knows he's is lying sack of crap, the rest of the family, as you know, is extremely supportive of Jerry. But it's not just Jerry. I mean, obviously, Graham Spanier, Tim Curley, and Gary Schultz,
yep.
No divorces there. How is that possible? How are none of them divorced? By the way, how is it that my wife hasn't left me? I'm sure she asks herself that question every single day. I mean, so there's been no divorces on the so-called defense side of this situation. On the other side, Aaron Fisher, victim number one, is divorced. His mom is divorced. Mike McQuarrie is divorced. Ryan Rittmeyer is in the process of divorce. Frank Fina, the prosecutor in the case, lost his law license. The grand jury judge lost his position because of his involvement in this case. Aaron Fisher's therapist lost his state certification because of his involvement in this case. I mean, it goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
Why is it? How is that possible? How is it possible that if what we were told was remotely true, that nobody, you know, Jerry's not divorced, Graham's not divorced, Tim's not divorced, Gary's not divorced, Ziegler's not divorced, and yet everything on the other side of this equation is exactly upside down? It doesn't make any damn sense unless what we're saying is true and the narrative we were given was a dark fairy tale.
Yeah, and even above and beyond that, John, it is the when you look at the both legal and just again ethical issues that have come up on the prosecution side versus again outside of this Sandusky case. Can you find anybody saying anything bad about Tim Curley, Graham Spanier, in terms of the way they conducted their personal or professional lives? Gary Schultz, even Jerry Sandusky. I mean, I know most hated man in America, but, like, outside of this, everybody agrees, well, no, I and I get the... this is an awful thing to be convicted of, but really he had no other shortcomings in his entire life that anybody wants to pile on with. Like, I do find that truly remarkable.
Well, you've hit on yet another important element of this whole story, and how it is that Joe Paterno, Graham Spanier, Tim Curley, Gary Schultz, and Jerry Sandusky, who all lived exemplary lives, never got one shred of benefit of the doubt, even in the first few days of this story. I mean, not a shred of the benefit of the doubt. Look what's happening with Chauncey Billups and this NBA scandal situation. I don't want to confuse the issues, but there's no media hysteria surrounding that. We're just going to wait and find out what the facts are, wait for a trial. Well, no one wanted to wait in this case.
Yeah.
We reacted first, and then we found out the facts later. And it is extraordinary that, you know, these five men who had exemplary records, and I believe were very good men, were thrown under the bus by Penn State and by most of the state college community in a media panic, in a moral panic, in a total frenzy. By the way, on my previous point about let's look what's happened since, I completely forgot one of the most important elements. Sarah Ganim, the local reporter who got credit for breaking this whole case. She was the one that broke the grand jury report well before this story exploded nationally in 2011. She gets the Pulitzer Prize. She wins the Pulitzer Prize, right? Let's just take a real quick look at what's happened since. She wins the Pulitzer Prize for her role in this story, which is her role was incredibly important,
yep.
Not just from a media perspective, but from a prosecutorial standpoint. She is now currently, and she never writes a book about this case. which is impossible. It's almost like there being no pornography. It's impossible to win a Pulitzer Prize and never write a book. You're a writer. You're a print reporter. You win a Pulitzer Prize, you never write a book about this case. You can't write a book about this case because she would either reveal the farce of the case or she would have nothing to write about because she was handed a story in a way that to manipulate her as a 23-year-old cub reporter. But not only did she not write a book, she gets a plum gig at CNN where she has infinite resources back when CNN was still considered very credible. She does nothing. Nothing. She gets, and her contract is not renewed, and now she's out of the business. How is that possible? If Sarah Gannon was this journalistic savant that we were told she was back in 2011, how could she never write a book and be out of the business already? That's just not possible.
No, I actually think that's a great point because, as we've been saying on this show, that she was just, as you said, she was a young cub reporter, and she's being fed this amazing story by the prosecutors, and that's what she did. She fed the prosecutor's story pretty much word for word, and yeah, got all kinds of accolades for it, but never really delve into the the other side of the case. And
now she actually recruited victims for the prosecution. That was actually put into evidence in court. The prosecution had to stipulate that was real, and the media just ignored it. And she still won the Pulitzer Prize.
Truly astounding. I mean, just beyond belief. John, I want to go back to Jasmine's interview and just the combined with Rittmeyer, I don't know, I guess you would say he recanted, what, 90-95% of the story he had told originally about Sandusky?
Based upon my interview with him, and, I actually think, unfortunately, that the appeal that Jerry just filed is based partly in false information, because I don't believe that Ryan has completely recanted his testimony. Now, maybe since Jasmine's interview came out, that was part of what my thinking was, that this might convince Ryan to give up the ghost and to finally tell the full truth. But it's difficult to describe Ryan's recantation because he says that the prosecutors manipulated him into saying things that weren't true. He said that his lawyers told Penn State things that were not true. He recants most of what he said in his trial testimony, but then he makes up this what I perceive to be news story of being abused in Jerry Sandusky's basement which he never mentions at trial. So it's kind of hard for me to describe, okay, what's the status of his recantation? You'll have to ask his buddy Frank Perlato for the latest on that. But unfortunately, I think Frank has contaminated whatever legal value that Ryan's recantation may have for the reasons I've already given.
John, one of the problems I also think, because I keep thinking and holding out hope that there will be multiple alleged victims that will come forward and own up, but between you and Frank and I guess we can now say Chad, I guess he's okay with his name being used publicly.
I presume so at this point.
And Chad Dubin was had gone and was seeking out the individuals trying to get them to basically own up to the truth, just to get them to tell the real story. But my takeaway from all of you is that most of these, if not all of these victims, that their lives are in such shambles that I'm not sure, like Alan Myers, I mean, it's actually a sad tale, but I mean, I don't know that Alan, even if he recanted it in the state that he's in right now, I'm not sure how credible anybody would take him at this point.
Well, you're referring to Alan Myers, who was the so-called boy in the shower in the Mike McQuarrie episode, who never testified at Jerry Sandusky's trial and had publicly and privately given statements completely exonerating Jerry Sandusky. I am unaware of most of what's going on with him, other than I knew that he was in a wheelchair recently. But I don't know the status of his life. I know that Aaron Fisher's life is in complete disarray, and he's not just divorced. He's had numerous run-ins with the law. It appears as if he is into drugs in a significant way. It would not surprise me at all if that ends very, very tragically with Aaron Fisher, and my guess is that would be perceived as all being blamed on Jerry Sandusky, which of course is upside down world stuff. But the reality is that other than number nine Sebastian Payton, who got paid $20 million from Penn State, more than twice as much as anybody else for reasons that I think are very, very suspicious, especially given what we now know from Jerry Sandusky's latest appeal, it appears as if the accusers are out of money. They're no longer getting money. Most of them have blown that money. In fact, Ryan refers to himself in my interview as a lottery winner, and that he was actually proud that he did not lose his money as fast as most lottery winners do, which is quite an extraordinary and I think very, very telling statement. You would think that once the money runs out, that that would give more of an opportunity for them to come forward and tell the truth.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest problem, Jeff, is I don't know that most of them are aware that Jerry is actually innocent. See, that was part of why Frank Perlotto, when we were still working together, and I just tried to do this interview with Ryan. Part of the interview was to get him on the record. Part of it was to convince him that Jerry is actually innocent. That was the glue that held the prosecution case together, was this belief that Jerry must be guilty. And so, therefore, I'm not putting an innocent man in prison.
Right.
That's why a lot of these guys went along with this, especially once they realized there were millions of dollars at stake. And the evidence of that is overwhelming, in my opinion. This happened on multiple occasions where guys who they realized, okay, I wasn't abused by Jerry, but he's guilty, and you know, so and I deserve this. And what's the real harm here?
Right.
And I'm actually helping put a monster pedophile behind bars. And so that's the biggest problem. Is it's really a catch 22. I mean, if the media ever did their job, and exposed that there is a completely different side of this story, and the people around these accusers put a little bit of pressure on them. And by the way, that's another part of the perfect storm here. Most of these accusers are still anonymous in their own worlds because the media never used their names, even though they were adult males. And so the people around them, many of them don't know that they got their money from being a Jerry Sandusky accuser. So there's not even people in their world that say, wait a minute, you were abused by Jerry Sandusky? You never said anything bad about him. You only said great things about him. There's never been any pressure put on these people in that regard. Now, I've tried my best to do so.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there's some accusers that are aware that there's a completely different side of this case. Weirdly, I've always thought that Matt Sandusky had the greatest incentive to reverse himself. One, because he got the least amount of money, and two, the gravy train is over for him. And three, as you well know, Dottie still holds out hope that he'll come home and that she'll get access to the grandkids again. I actually believe that Matt, bizarrely, would be treated like a prodigal son if he ever recanted his testimony.
Yeah.
But there's no evidence that that's going to happen because Matt has no soul.
He's had problems from day one. That's another story for probably another show. John, we thank you. The truth is available, folks. I don't know how we get it into the court system. I'm hopeful that this appeal will go the way all of the appeals previously should go, but I'm not overly optimistic. I will say that.
Well, Pennsylvania is never going to give Jerry Sandusky justice when the judges are up for election. It's just that simple.
Yeah.
It's never going to happen.
No,
and that's why
right.
Jerry Sandusky has to go to federal court. And unfortunately, I thought I convinced him of that many years ago, but I failed. And until this gets into federal court, I'm not really remotely optimistic.
John, as always, appreciate the time, appreciate the work.
Thanks, Jeff.
John Ziegler, kind enough to join us this morning. We will take a final break here, just a couple of minutes remaining on our Friday show. You're listening to Let's Talk on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
We don't just talk sports. We live it. Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox.
Hi, listen, if you're considering an assisted living facility for yourself or a loved one, it's important that you choose a highly rated facility. And Celebrationville of Nittany Valley is one of those facilities. U.S. News & World Report 2025 ranked Celebrationville of Nittany Valley as the best assisted living facility. Now that's a great accolade. Celebrationville of Nittany Valley specializes in enhanced personal and memory care. Located in State College, from the moment you arrive, you'll find your or your family member's needs are met with the utmost attention and mindfulness. Nestled in a quiet, modern setting, Celebration Villa of Nittany Valley offers a warm and friendly community that's close enough to town to keep you or your family member connected, yet far enough away to provide that peaceful country feeling. For details, go to CelebrationVillaOfNittanyValley.com. That's one word, CelebrationVillaOfNittanyValley.com. Or call one of our friendly staff members for leasing and sales. Call 814-235-7675. Celebration Villa of Nittany Valley.
Save big and head to your local Toro dealer, Maxwell Equipment, for the sales event going on now. Stop in today and get up to $1,500 off select Z-Master mowers and Grandstand, Multi-Force, Stand-Ons, plus $500 off select attachments. Visit Maxwell Equipment on Shiloh Road for more details on promotions and financing offers. Toro, count on it.
Join us for the Goon and Ironhead Show, Tuesday and Thursday afternoons from 2 to 4, right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Goon loves Philadelphia sports. I love Pittsburgh sports. We both love Penn State sports, and we both just like talking sports, and you never know where the discussion will take us. That's part of the fun. Join us for the good times, Tuesday and Thursday afternoon from 2 to 4, right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Be a part of the best event of the winter, Happy Valley Comic Con, February 28 and March 1 at Nittany Valley Sports Center. 100,000 square feet of fun with sci-fi and fantasy fans from across the region. If you're a vendor of anything looking to reach this energized audience, open space is currently available. Go to happyvalleycomiccon.com. Click on the Vendors tab for information. Reserve your space today and get ready for a weekend of action and profit. happyvalleycomiccon.com. Click on the Vendors tab. Happy Valley Comic Con, February 28 and March 1 at Nittany Valley Sports Center.
It's Let's Talk on this Halloween Friday. Just a couple minutes remaining. If you want to chime in on the John Ziegler interview or anything else, we're happy to hand that time over to you. 814-954-7266 as we head into the three-day party weekend. Penn State, Ohio State, hockey tonight at 6:30. Football tomorrow at high noon on Fox, and you can check out all of John Ziegler's work at the With the Benefit of Hindsight, the latest podcast with Jasmine is certainly worth the listen if you're interested in the truth in the Jerry Sandusky case. Again, after this show, we will have the Dan Patrick Show from 10 to noon today. At noon, it'll be Joe Lednoski and the Pennsylvania Sports Network getting you ready for a busy weekend in sports. They'll certainly be talking Penn State, Ohio State, Penn State coaching search, and much more. Chris Buccinati rolls your way from 2 to 3 this afternoon. A lot more Penn State football talk there, and even more Penn State football talk with Jim Galati and the Keystone Kickoff Show. That will roll your way from 3 to 4 this afternoon, and we hope everybody is safe and enjoys the trick-or-treating this evening. And again, a reminder to turn those clocks back. Oh, I'm ready to be done with this. I will. I'm not gonna lie. I'll take the extra hour of sleep if I can get it. I don't know that It always sounds good, and then I wake up at the usual time, is usually what happens. But extra hour of sleep does sound good, but we need to do away. No more daylight saving time. Scott Gacy will be back with us on Monday, rested, undoubtedly raring to go. We'll have lots to talk about from a busy weekend, including the shocking upset by the Nittany Lions over Ohio State. I'm trying, folks. I'm trying to buy into it at Ohio State tomorrow. We do hope you have a safe and enjoyable Halloween weekend. And again, we will talk to you on Monday.
Sports Radio 98.7, the Fox Sports.
Is your Sunday home for the National Football League. All of the big teams.
Spins into the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City.
Big names.
Burrow throws over the middle into coverage, and it is caught. Unbelievable.
It's the NFL. Sundays on Central PA Sports Authority.
The Fox Sports Weekend. Sports Radio 98.7. The Fox Sports.
Eating healthy is important for us and for our animals. The Center Hall Farm Store knows this. Local, fresh ingredients are put in all of our feeds. Expert care from people ingrained in our community. If you haven't been to the Center Hall Farm Store yet, do yourself and your animals a favor and stop on in at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall. See what a difference the local touch can make in providing real quality. And be sure to check out our website at centerhallfarmstore.com.
Looking for something different? But you want something that's quick and affordable that won't set you back in the pocketbook? Then you need to head down to Brothers Pizza and Corn.